Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And do you believe in life after death? Well, maybe if you're listening to the show, you either likely do or that you would like to believe in life after death. And you need more evidence, more understanding about it. And we're going to do that. So stay tuned because this is a show that I'm going to really be happy to interview. Our guest is Roberta Grimes, the author of The Fun of Staying in Touch. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, I'm so glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you were on my show not long ago.
Yes.
And that was for your previous book. And you keep doing this. You keep on coming out with books about...
I love this whole topic because all the news is good. I mean, it's joyous to be able to share wonderful, wonderful truth that most people just don't have any inkling of.
Well, what's interesting is that the evidence is beyond reproach. There really is so much, and we're going to talk about why that's true. And it doesn't matter how good the evidence is, there are many, many, many millions and maybe billions of closed minds in the world who don't want to know about it, even if it's irrefutable. They don't want to know. Don't tell
that's
me
true.
It can't be true.
And you're right, and yeah. That's shocking. Don't you think that's shocking?
Well, no. I think we live on a stupid planet, and it just keeps on revealing itself.
Oh, my.
Luckily, yes. There are some smart people here, too.
No, the unfortunate thing is that there are many people who have a big investment in their personal lives, in having materialism be material, the reality that we think we live in be material, and also many people who are so involved in a particular set of religious beliefs that they don't want any truth to intrude in those. So We're stuck in a situation where a lot of people have a big personal investment in keeping people from knowing the truth about all of this.
I have an old friend who's an esteemed professor at a major university, and I've torn my hair out trying to talk to him.
Yeah.
There's no way to get through.
It's
impossible.
You're right. Isn't that awful?
It's a shame. No, let's talk about why it's a shame.
It's a shame, and it's for a long time I was sort of, oh, isn't that sad, and I was trying to help people learn the truth. I'm beginning to be angry and trying not to be, but there's so much unnecessary suffering on so many levels caused by the fact that the people we trust the most are trying to keep us from knowing what is true.
Well,
it's hard to forgive that. It's hard to think it's okay that people do that.
That's true on every level of society nowadays.
Yeah,
including
you're right.
Agriculture,
you're right.
Economics, medicine.
Awful to say, but I think you're right.
Yeah. So, but let's go where there's hope because
okay.
there's even hope to die. Nowadays, I mean, we really should understand death as an opportunity.
Yeah.
And so there's so many films you see and death is terrible for those left behind. And even for those moving on, for instance, I don't want to move on before I have time to meet my grandchildren. Even though I'll get to see them anyway. I'll get to see them from the other side, but I won't be part of their third dimensional growth, and that would be a lot more fun, and I would miss that opportunity.
Speaking as a grandmother, I know how you feel.
Right.
I can really identify with that.
Exactly. So death isn't, to be thrilled about. It's just that if and when it does happen, it's wonderful in its own way.
Yeah.
It's wonderful because it's going home. It's going back to where we really originally belong. And we have tremendous family there and friends, as many, if not more, than here. And, it's just that here is where we create. We come back here for a reason. And the reason really has to do with, part of it is the struggle of being here and the limitations, and to have to reach deeper into our hearts to find love to deal with the struggle. And that enhances our soul growth tremendously, and that's why it's worthwhile being here. At least that's my philosophy about it.
Well, and you're right. I would just add that the dead tell us the same thing that Jesus told us, which is that we're here to learn to love perfectly, and here to learn to forgive completely. Not sort of loving and sort of forgiving, but really as God would, as God does.
Right, in the deepest way.
And yes, and we plan our lives, and we plan into our lives the very things that most vex us while we're living, that awful ex-husband and, you know, the boss you hate, all the things that are negative, even, you know, personal setbacks and illness and deaths, we plan that in, all of it, as growth opportunities. It's like
right.
It's like going to the spiritual gym, and we're strengthening those love and forgiveness muscles by having these experiences.
I have a client who went through an absolutely terrible divorce. Her husband was horrible to her and to the children. I mean, it was just a really bad, bad divorce, and he looked like a really bad guy. And yet she ended up, after the divorce, she ended up comfortable. And then she did a past life regression and went in between lifetimes and came back and said to me, she said, "Guess what? He's my soulmate."
That's an interesting story. Yes, that happens.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So we have
people tell us who communicate after they have died. We'll say that, well, there was this big party and so-and-so shut up. And I realized that he is one of my most, you know, intimate eternal friends. And he came and played that awful part that this person had played in his life as a gift to me. It really changes your view of everything, really.
Right. And so there's so much to learn about life. And the dead have so much to tell us. And they communicate, so much of your book is how the dead communicate with us and how we can communicate with them on so many, many levels. There
yes.
are even scientists in the heavens. Scientific
yes.
teams.
Oh, yes, whole teams.
Right, working right. on communicating with us better, figuring
yeah.
out, you know,
oh, yes.
and then they convey that information to us. So on this level, there are teams here working with them that are scientifically putting together new equipment to better contact the dead.
That's right, yes. And the people who are here doing this work, some of them quite eminent, tell us they're the lab assistants, basically. The intellectual effort, the planning, the design come from these teams of the dead. They have a much better perspective on what they're dealing with in trying to make better communication happen.
And there are already a lot of experts out there, and that's why many times the dead can communicate with us, because there are techniques that they're taught. The dead are
yes.
taught techniques on,
yes.
on how to make things happen on our plane.
Yes.
So that we can see them. You know why I'm so smart about this? Because I read your book.
Well, you know, I thought everybody knew this stuff, and then I started to hear from people who had read the book, and they had no idea. I didn't know that was her doing that all those years, or I didn't know, you know, when I would smell his pipe smoke, that was really a communicate. I didn't know that. So that's why I wish I'd written the book sooner. I sort of delayed it because I was doing other things, but people didn't know this stuff, which is basic understanding of how close the dead are to us and how much they love us.
Right. Now, you wonder about things. Like, for instance, a woman I know, her son died, and her young son, he was still a youth, and he has been sending her or showing her hearts. They appear everywhere.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
And from your book now, we know that actually her son probably had teachers out there to show him how to create these hearts on our plane so that they show up to her.
Yes. Yeah. The minds of the dead have a much more power to affect matter than our minds do. They're free of our material bodies, which seem to act as kind of a limiter on our mind. So they can do, you know, move objects, make them disappear, make them appear. They can do all this with their minds, but they do need coaching, as you point out, by the teams of the dead who have been working with matter for many, you know, thousands of years, because this problem has existed for thousands of years, that they were as close to us as the air we breathe, but they couldn't communicate. They couldn't make us know they were okay. And so they came up long ago with these signs that they could give us. And if only we understood that's what they were, we would be comforted to know that, you know, he survived, he's okay.
Right.
So that's what we hope will happen now. Everybody will come to understand what these signs are.
And heaven isn't far away. It's like,
no,
let's see, you have
right.
to go through the clouds and then out maybe near the sun or whatever.
No, that's right. That's one of the things I remember as a child looking up and thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, where are they sitting? But actually, there are at least six levels of after-death reality that exist exactly where we are, precisely where we are. And they're just at higher vibratory rates. It's to communicate with them or for have them communicate with us is just a matter of changing spiritual vibration.
Right.
And they can lower their rates to ours pretty easily and be right with us. Because they're in the same place anyway, but it's just like they're in channel 7 and we're in channel 3. So they can just lower their channel and they're right where we are.
Actually, I did some shows with this mother and son team of astral travelers. And they traveled out there. They had guides with them who showed them around. And there's a place when people die, the first place they go to is a level, because as you say, there are all these levels. There's a level called arrivals and departures.
Yeah, like a train station or an airport.
Well,
yeah.
It's even more than that, because it's designed to make us happy and to make us feel at home. So in a sense, there is a Christian heaven, a Jewish heaven, a Muslim heaven, an atheist heaven, because when you get out there, if you're disappointed, you're not going to want to be there, but they make you comfortable.
This is such a wonderful point. The whole process is designed with infinite love around what we need to make us feel happy and comfortable, and it's a very personal design. It seems to tend to be different for each person. Whatever we most need is what we're going to get. The people we most need to see, the environment that will most comfort us, that's what happens at death. It's extraordinary how much care is taken of us.
It's so wonderful. I'm so happy to talk about this. And now, you know, your relationship to it and mine too, you know, we both obviously have a connection, an intuitive connection with this. I am a practicing intuitive. I'm not a medium, really. I mean, I have been able to talk to the most recent dead. I can talk to people at their funerals. But I don't. When people come back, if they've been out there for a long time, I don't hear from them directly. I actually hear from my guides. I get running commentaries, and I had that recently at my son's wedding. My father, who's been dead for 55 years, showed up. And he came to the wedding. This was in November. And I got a running commentary from my guides on everything my father was doing there, including dancing with my wife. And, you know, it was beautiful.
I think that's fabulous. Yeah. I'm not an intuitive. I have asked not to have any psychic abilities. It's just not my journey. Of course, we all have them. And I discovered while I was still writing The Fun of Dying, I discovered through a medium friend that five dead clergymen had kind of latched onto me, and they've really been driving me ever since. But they don't communicate with me anyway except during the night. If I have a question or something concerns me, I think it to them. Sometimes say it aloud, but I usually don't. I usually just think it, and the answer is in my mind when I wake up in the morning. So I know they're working,
mm-hmm.
but they know to respect me and not to be more overt in my life than they are.
Okay, well, this gives you more objectivity.
Yes, that's what I need. Yes. I mean, when I'm doing this research, Because people often ask me, well, do you channel this somehow? And I don't. I look at evidence just as I would as an attorney look at evidence, which I still am a practicing attorney. We look at facts. We look at evidence. We put it together in a rational way. So I think that's helpful to people because not everybody really believes that people can channel or can be intuitive. You don't need to be. There is so much evidence, and it is so breathtakingly consistent that you don't need to rely on someone's ability to contact people who are dead or people who are guides now. It's all right there, and that's what my books, The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch, are based in, is just the facts that have come to us over a couple of hundred years in so many different ways that all say the same thing. Isn't that glorious?
Yes, and also people who do past life regression in hypnosis and then they go in between lifetimes all have the same stories too.
Yes, that's part of it, really. What seems to be the case is that people who travel out of body, people who have near-death experiences, people who have experiences of any kind that are supernatural and then come back from them don't actually go where the dead are. They're at the same vibratory rate as the dead, but they're not in the same place. In fact, they're in many more extensive near-death experiences. The person who comes back will say, I was told there was the boundary, and if I crossed that boundary, I could never come back. So they would get right to the edge, but they would then turn home again or turn back to this temporary home that we think of as home here.
And there are people who have NDEs who have seen loved ones out there.
Yes. There is apparently a place, a non-physical place, a sort of in-your-mind place, which is not where the dead are, but where the dead can meet us. And I've heard so many tales of these meetings that I'm coming to believe that it is a standard phenomenon. There are people who are able to teach us. Our Craig Hogan, who I recommend strongly, I recommend anyone who's interested in having a personal relationship with a dead person, go to R. Craig Hogan's website, which is, I can't recall what, but if you Google R. Craig Hogan, you can find it. And he's come up with an 8-step process by which you can learn to do your own intimate connection with your dead loved one. And these connections happen in a real place, physically solid place. People walk, people talk, people hug. It's just glorious. Not easy to teach yourself to do this, but if you go through the 8 steps, many, many people have had great success with it. And so there is a place. Somehow, there is a place. And no matter how we get there, our dead loved ones can get there, too, and we can meet them. As you say, through a near-death experience or in other kinds of experiences as well, people have learned. There's a shamanistic tradition also where the same kind of thing is done. And I know a woman who's in contact with her 2 murdered sons all the time in this sort of neutral place that they've constructed together.
And then there are people like Robert Moss who can travel out there in his dream states and meet with famous authors and philosophers. He's had amazing experiences meeting people from ancient times. He goes to a building called the Library, and it's where a lot of famous authors they just preside there and do additional writing. A lot of them out there. I mean, for instance, I have a client who does automatic writing, and dead poets write poems through her.
Oh yes, oh yeah, that's a definite phenomenon for people who have the ability, and many more people have the ability to do automatic writing than can become mediums. It seems to be just another innate skill that if you never tried playing tennis, you don't know how well you could do it. Well, if you've never tried automatic writing, you don't understand whether or not you could do that either. But I always tell people, although many people can learn to do it and do it well, always make sure you surround yourself with white light and call in your guides, because you can get some negative entities that hone in. We're told the dead will hone in on someone who can do automatic writing just as if it were a beacon. They can spot you and they can come in. So you want to make sure you're being protected and you'll only get good entities channeling through you.
Yeah, and make sure that what you're writing looks like the light.
Yeah.
And feels like the light.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing that you do. But, yes, it is so simple. There are so many different ways now that we can communicate with the dead. I almost said it's so simple. In a way, it is so simple because there's so many options. The only thing that keeps people from doing it, two things. One is your own grief. Anyone who is too deep in grief has put up an absolute barrier to communication. So the first step, if you're really grieving, is to learn that your loved one is okay. You know, satisfy yourself by reading books. If you can't afford The Fun of Dying, I'll send you a copy. Just contact me through my website. It's very important to know that they're fine. Because when they are and your grief is a little bit less, then the floodgates can open and you can have a real relationship still.
I was at my brother's wife's funeral this summer, and I'm sitting at a gravesite. The seat next to me was open. I was immediate family, and not everybody wanted to take seats as immediate family if they didn't feel they were. So the seat next to me was still open, and the ceremony at the gravesite started, and all of a sudden, my dead sister-in-law started just kind of yapping in my ear.
Oh, wow.
She gave me a running commentary about her feelings about the whole ceremony, about the eulogies, and, you know, because that's where the whole funeral took place. It wasn't a previous thing. Everyone showed up at the at the cemetery. So she had a lot to say, and I didn't speak back to her at all. I was just listening to her, and it was really fascinating. It's kind of a lonely experience because, you know, no one else at the funeral could understand what was happening.
Right. And this is a common question. People will ask me all the time, well, do we go to our own funerals? And the answer is, very often we do. Some people aren't up to it, but very often we do. And some people have a high old time at their own funerals.
Sure. So curiosity, too.
Yeah. Well, it's just, these are people you love, and this is something that really involves you in a very intimate way. People talk about your life and so on. People are naturally drawn to go to their own funerals. I always assume whenever I go to one that the person who has died is there. So I sort of send kind thoughts to them and send a little mental hug.
Well, that's good. I mean, I often at funerals, my guides will give me commentaries about the dead there, and they'll show me where they are, what they're doing, and what's going on with them. And but then sometimes, like with my sister-in-law, they actually speak right to me, and that's, as I said, I'm not really a medium, even though occasionally it happens. As an intuitive, we're all different. Intuitives are different. You know, I'm clairaudient. Some people are clairvoyant, clairsentient. There are different ways of tuning in. So there's so much in your book about all this, and it's so much fun talking with you. And maybe I can have you back on the show again soon.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love to talk to you as well.
Oh,
it's great to talk to someone who has these stories to tell. So we can sort of, and I think it's fun for people to hear, too, different people who have had these experiences and have this knowledge, comparing notes and seeing where we differ and maybe where we can add to one another's knowledge. It's fun.
Right.
I don't get to talk often enough to people who have as much knowledge as you do, and I love it.
Well, people should definitely get your book, The Fun of Staying in Touch, How Our Loved Ones Contact Us and How We Can Contact Them. And your name is Roberta Grimes. And what website do you have?
RobertaGrimes.com is my website. I also do podcasting on this topic, and in fact have nearly 200,000 iTunes podcast subscribers at this point. So many people want to know this stuff. But if you just go to iTunes and search on Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, I called it Seek Reality because that's what we all should be doing, right? All the podcasts I've done are there, and I've interviewed some fairly famous people in this field. But it's just a joy to me to do these podcasts, and so I'd love to hear from people who have heard them. So there's that as well. And on robertagrimes.com, I blog about all of this and all the implications of it in the broadest sense. I mean, the science of it fascinates me. The implications for our personal lives and for the direction of humanity, all of that is so fascinating. And I talk about the role of Jesus in all of this as well, because I think that that's some of the big news that is about to break in the next few years, that Jesus was right, the religion maybe not so much.
That's true. I agree with that. It's amazing how much is known and how much denial there is about it, and
that's
resistance,
right.
and aggression against it even.
Well, people have livelihoods, and people have worldviews that need to be protected. But why they would be protecting their livelihoods and their worldviews against truths that are going to transform mankind for the better is beyond me. I don't think I couldn't do that. I want everyone to know what's true, because what's true is so glorious, and it truly will transform the world. If you're discouraged about the way the world is now, the most important thing you can do is educate yourself about what truly is going on, and then help to share that with others.
And
we're going to make history.
And one thing I like to talk about is that we are in a new epoch. We've gone through the last epoch of about 360 years, according to the Mayan calendar, and that was called day. Every 360 years is a shift from day to night, day to night, day to night. And so we just finished 360 years of day. And so that's when empires are built. As soon as you go into an epoch of night, those empires crumble. And that's what's happening, is that the world as we know it, the Western world, the Western mind, all this resistance is crumbling. And so we're going into the night, which is the divine feminine, which is inner knowing, which is higher truth. And that's what we have to live by in the future, and that's what we will live by.
Well, I hope, you know, your mouth to God's ears. I hope all of that is true. I mean, you know me, I'm just the facts. I'm just a dry investigator here.
Right. Well,
and even from that perspective, I would say the same thing. We are about to have burst upon human consciousness a whole new wave of understanding, and it's already
right.
happening. I see it in
right.
the audiences I speak before now. The world is about to change for the better, and that is so exciting.
And the map that the Mayans laid out through thousands of years has always been true about these day to night, and that's why their date of a couple of years ago moving us into this new era, that's why we see all this happening. And so let's enjoy it, and hopefully I can get you on in a couple of weeks. We can talk some more. 'Cause
I would love that.
Yeah, me too. So, Roberta Grimes, thanks so much for coming back to Energy Stew, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much, and everyone, please have a wonderful day.
That's right. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. And I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.